To Harris's relief, they returned through the town in the gleaming cars of their first visit. She had not looked forward to climbing back on a horse. I could get addicted to this.
Addicted to what? Riding in parades?
That, and being the conquering hero. Knowing I did something really worthwhile. Harris refrained from pointing out that Cecilia herself hadn't done that much. She'd volunteered her, well, their yacht and crew, but she herself had not fired a weapon. Still, she had been in danger with them, and in all honesty, Harris herself had enjoyed the cheering crowds.
This is the easy part.
I know. But then I always did like victory celebrations. I never thought I'd have another one, not like the old days.
Didn't you get any satisfaction out of your return to Rockhouse?
Not really. The king resigned. I had no chance to talk to him first. And Lorenza, she escaped. Even if she died, and I agree she must have, she escaped me. I wanted to slap her smug face myself. Then I found out the yacht wasn't mine anymore. I couldn't even take off on my own.
But we did.
Yes, we did. Out of your courtesy, it was no longer my right. I'm sorry, Harris. It must sound silly to you, but all the way back from the Guerny Republic, I fantasized such a gorgeous, impressive homecoming, storming in and confounding everyone. The feeling we've had today, that's what I had in mind. Bands playing, flags waving, my family all in a heap of contrition. Admission of guilt, begging of forgiveness. Instead, with the king's resignation, everything seemed to fall apart. My affairs didn't matter that much compared to the change in government. I wasn't a hero after all. Very annoying, actually. Especially when Berenice had the nerve to say that if I was going to get rejuvenation, I should have spent a little more and gotten some remodeling.
What?
Oh, yes. After all, I didn't have to live the same selfish life as before, and if I'd bothered to try, I could look quite nice and perhaps marry. I swear, Harris, it was at that moment I decided to sue them for their idiocy. Before that, I had been annoyed, but that did it. Not a scrap of remorse for the hell she'd put me through in that damned nursing home, but the same old superior attitude about my looks and my duty to the family. I'll show her duty, I thought.
Harris had wondered more than once why Cecilia was so determined to sue the family. Now she was caught between sympathy and laughter.
It wasn't very tactful of her.
She never was tactful. No small child is. One reason I don't like small children. But she was remarkable, even for a child. She told me once, "You may be famous, but I'm pretty, and you never will be." It was true, of course, but it hurt anyway.
So that's why you've sued them?
Yes, mostly, I suppose. They keep thinking I'm nothing. Handy to do their chores when they wanted Ronnie off Rockhouse for a year. Handy for loans when they want to expand their holdings. Handy for a joke whenever they want to feel elegant and so on. And I just got tired of it.
Huh. It's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy take a walk.
What?
I thought perhaps you might know Kipling. One of his poems that will live as long as military organizations, because that's how the military is always treated. Despised until needed, then cozened into things. Blamed for whatever goes wrong and praised when it gets praise for the wrong things.
Exactly. Though I suppose my life hasn't been that bad, really.
Harris watched the flicker of amusement in Cecilia's eyes. Just when she'd given up, the woman would show that wry self-assessment, that ability to keep things in balance. They rode another few blocks in companionable silence. Then Cecilia shifted to face Harris directly.
"What's worrying you? You are as tense as on the island today, and it wasn't all saddle sores."
"We're celebrating too early. There's something wrong with that raid. We won too easily. And we may have made things worse by winning. I'm half expecting Kutsudas to call and say there's an entire fleet of enemy ships coming in."
"That's ridiculous. Here? What are they going to steal? Horses and cattle and antelopes and sheep? And what enemy?"
"There are mining colonies on the gas giant's moons."
"Piddly. They're hardly 2 decades old, and just now beginning to break even. Nothing unusual, and most of it will be processed in this system, developing an industrial base to allow bulk mining later."
"A slow payback on the investment."
"You're right. It hadn't occurred to me, but I wonder if that's going to be an effect of rejuvenant political influence."
"What?"
Harris was still trying to think why some enemy would make Xavier a target. As Cecilia had said, horses and cattle weren't usually of great interest to aggressive political entities. They looked for shipyards, manufacturing centers, things like that.
Well, rejuvenants can afford the years to develop slow-growth industries, things that would have been marginal at best for non-rejuvenated individuals, projects that families can carry out only if they convince successive generations to support them.
Harris filed that away to think about later. At the moment, she was more interested in what had really happened with the raid, and what she could say to the Xavieran government, such as it was. At the party, the General Secretary bowed over her hand. Unlike Senior Captain Vasilos, who had seemed almost theatrical in his military posture, the General Secretary looked like an amiable bear, graying brown hair, bright brown eyes. Harris had not really looked at him before, but now she liked what she saw. She smiled, nodded, and let herself be passed on down the reception line. Beyond the line, her faithful escort showed her to a comfortable, softly padded seat. A waiter appeared with a tray of drinks, and another with a tray of finger foods. None of the people who came up to her seemed to think she looked funny, and after a while she quit thinking about the riding boots and breeches, especially when she saw half a dozen others wearing them. Cecilia appeared at her side with three rangy women as tall as herself.
Harris, these are the Carmody sisters. They own one of the breeding farms I'll be visiting.
Cecilia says you ride!
That was the youngest of the sisters, or the one who looked youngest. Harris suddenly noticed a blue and silver ring like Cecilia's, only higher on the woman's left ear. Then it sank in. Another horse enthusiast.
Only a little. In the parade, for instance.
Oh, but she said you rode to hounds. Tell me, does Bunny still have that fierce trainer? What was his name?
Don't they know anything but horses?
Yes, he does. And you're supposed to be thanking Harris for knocking off that raider.
Harris felt her irritation subsiding.
Well, of course, but Davin said all that, I thought. Now that it's over...
Yeah, I'm not really an expert on horses. Lady Cecilia has very kindly tutored me, but I'm already out of my depth.
Oh. Well, Cecilia, suppose you give us some idea of what you're looking for.
Harris would have laughed if she hadn't been trapped by her stiffening body into a corner that soon filled with all the horsey set on Xavier. Breeders, mostly, whom Cecilia introduced. Most of them just managed to remember why Harris was being honored before they launched into anecdotes about horses, arguments about breeding strategies and training methods, and plain, unmistakable brags. By the time the General Secretary's assistant came to suggest that she might like to meet with him and a few others in the library, she was feeling very grumpy indeed.
If I understood Captain Vasilos correctly, you believe there were more ships in the system observing your battle with the raider. If that is so, can you explain why it bothered you? I may as well mention that none of our scan technicians found a trace of such a ship, even when they went back over the recorded scans.
Sir, let me take the last point first. Your scan techs are working with civilian-level scans, and old ones at that. We happen to have more up-to-date scans on the yacht, which means that we can see farther and detect smaller disturbances.
Oh, you have military-grade equipment.
I prefer not to specify the equipment we have. Not to impugn the integrity of anyone in this room, but it may be that our ability to detect trouble at a range where trouble believes itself undetectable will save lives.
I see. And you believe there were other ships in the system observing? How many ships?
We detected one.
The General Secretary nodded. He had caught the implication.
It may, of course, have been an innocent vessel with a very cautious captain, but its arrival, its response to the battle, and its departure suggest something else. My scan tech has been working on the data we got. There is some indication that the ship has a history of traversing systems just as raids are going on. A paymaster, perhaps.
But who would be doing that? Even when they destroyed our orbital station, they got little for it. We couldn't figure out then what they really wanted.
To see if the fleet would come to clean house, I suspect. When you got so little response from fleet, they came back. As much to test that hypothesis as anything else.
But why? We have no great wealth. We're not on the direct route to anywhere else, as I'm sure you noticed.
To be honest, I have not yet had time for a serious consideration of what may lie behind what we saw. But I am sure that another ship observed our handling of the raider, and that it was there precisely to observe your defensive capability. That suggests some plan for an attack. From whom or why, I cannot say at this point.
She suspected, but she did not want to commit herself yet.
What should we do?
Send an urgent message to Fleet, of course. I'm sure you're aware that things are unsettled in places. They have other problems. Still, we can draft a report that should elicit some response. Even sending such a report may help out. I would expect those watching your situation to know of such a request. They would probably delay any action until they ascertained whether Fleet responded in force.
Or they would attack all the faster if they were nearly ready. Harris wished she had more knowledge and less intuitive sense of time ticking away.
You were not sent here as a sort of representative of Fleet?
No. I am not now in the regular space service. I'm a civilian, hired by Lady Cecilia to take her where she wishes. In this case, here, to look for bloodstock.
I thought it was her yacht.
It was, but through a legal tangle when she was in a coma last year, it became mine. She will probably tell you the whole thing if you ask her.
Harris didn't want to. She realized that someone who wanted to see her arrival with the sweet delight as more than providential could find other reasons for the change of ownership.
As long as you're here, could we beg your assistance, your advice? I quite understand that you're not, as you say now, in Fleet, but you have more experience in these matters than anyone else here. If you could suggest how we should think about this menace you spoke of, or how we could prepare to meet it.
Prepare to die, she could have said, honestly enough. With one cranky old escort, underpowered and lightly armed, with no bulk transport to get its population away to someplace safe, Xavier would be no more a match for a serious invasion than the raider had been for Sweet Delight. But for all their bright, perky music, their colorful, impractical uniforms, their screeching mast pipes, yes, and even the number of horse enthusiasts, Harris liked these people.
While we're here, I will be glad to give you what advice I can. But whether it does any good, that I can't know.
Of course not. And we will show our gratitude by taking your first advice to send word to the regular arm of Fleet. Sorry, I mean to Fleet Sector HQ.
I'll get back up to my ship and see what we've got in our records. Lady Cecilia brought her things down. She plans to visit various breeders here. So if you can tell me about the next shuttle...
You won't stay the night?
No. To be honest, I'll be more comfortable up there in direct contact with our scan techs.
Quite so. Then if it's agreeable, we'll plan to confer with you on the station in the next few days. And there'll be a shuttle ready. When, Captain Vassilos?
3 hours. It's fueling now.
Thank you.
Harris started to stand up and winced.
Oh, yeah. Lady Cecilia's right. I really should practice more on her simulator.
Never mind. It's not your equestrian expertise we need now.
All the better, since I don't have any.
Back aboard Sweet Delight, she called up the data they had gathered and came up with the answers, or answers that made sense. The Xavierans considered themselves remote, far from any population or power center. They were remote from the center of any political entity, but not so remote from frontiers. After all, she had had to file a letter of intent with the RSS to visit Xavier, because it was in a frontier zone.
Location, location, location.
The Familia's regnant had grown by accretion, expanding along trade routes through unclaimed space until it bumped into resistance. The neat spheres of influence predicted by earlier planners existed only for small political units. Larger entities looked more like multidimensional models of complex organic molecules. Although this meant a larger surface to protect, for the volume included, the advantage of an outlying lobe that included vital jump points more than compensated for the extra defensive exposure. Castle Rock, with its massive stations Rockhouse Major and Minor, lay more or less at the center of Familius Regnant space, at least in 3 major axes. But those axes were not equal. The longest dimension was 5 or 6 times the shortest, including two fat tentacles or pseudopods extending toward compassionate hand territory. The interface between the Familius and its neighbors resembled that of an enzyme and its protein companion. Star by star, the competing entities had fit themselves together in a way that increased the defensive difficulties by making the contact surface vast. Most of the time, this surface was merely a potential one. In spaces far too large to garrison, contact existed only sporadically, and along the usual mapped routes of travel. Harris knew from experience that the ability to visualize the spatial interactions required both innate talent and practice. The visual representation she took to the next meeting with the General Secretary and his staff was far simpler than the one she and Petrus and Kutsudis would use. Even so, the General Secretary had trouble with it.
What's this skinny little thing out here?
Us.
Harris grinned at his shocked expression.
I know. You thought we were closer to the interior because Xavier is a short jump from Byerly and Newgarten and Shiva, but they're all strung out along one jump route with an even smaller twig for Neverfall. There's Rockhouse, and there's Rotterdam.
Rotterdam, on its own slender twig, three jump points from Xavier because of the need to go around the saddle-shaped compassionate hand intrusion. As the General Secretary stared at the color-coded visual, Harris added the icons that were Kutsudis's best guess for the locations of fleet and compassionate hand warships. The compassionate hand maintained major bases in the saddle between the lobes where Xavier and Rotterdam lay. Logical. So did the RSS. When this survey had been taken, they had had two battle groups at Partis and one at Vashnagel. Harris explained what that meant, trying to keep it simple.
The compassionate hand intends its battle groups to be more than just space fighters. Each battle group deploys units capable of invading and occupying fixed positions, such as space stations and satellite defense systems. On a sparsely settled planet without good defenses, such teams could even take control of the entire world. More commonly, they would scorch the population from space, blow the population centers, perhaps with tactical nukes. Then they'd land their own construction teams and equipment.
They'd just kill everyone for no reason?
From their point of view, there's a reason. They don't care about people they don't need, and if they've chosen Xavier for a forward base, they don't want to waste time converting your population.
And they might choose us because...
Because of the jump point access Xavier provides. Although the direct route is straightforward, there are more alternatives from here than Rotterdam. It's still tricky. Look, the point of coming through here is surprise. So if they lose surprise here, they've expended effort for no gain. That means they'll try to interrupt communications as soon as, even before, they attack. Do you have daily Ansible traffic?
No. In fact, the charges are high enough that we usually store and batch it once a week at most.
So no one outside would notice if you didn't send a batch for a week or so.
That's right. Oh, I see. Then I suppose they could fabricate a message.
If they needed to. My point being, Xavier is most valuable in the early stages of a war. Then its value drops until they can get their defenses up, when it becomes valuable again simply because it denies those jump points to Fleet.
And our plan?
Tell Fleet what we think, and keep telling them until they listen. And don't let ourselves be surprised by an invasion force we weren't expecting. And hope that the enemy has not already intercepted their messages.
Rafa wandered around the street market on the planet Music, but caught no sight of the king, or clone, or whoever that had been. She couldn't see far anyway, past the colorful awnings and dwarf flowering trees, the little clusters of booths strung with banners. Finally, when her stomach informed her it was lunchtime, she followed her nose to a booth where a deft-fingered man wrapped spirals of meat and bread dough on sticks and grilled them. Next to that booth, another sold fruit punches. Rafa picked something called omberry, which she had never had before. She chose a bench under one of the non-flowering trees. She had noticed the bees humming among flowers, and worked her way down the meat and bread spirals. Her omberry punch had tartness enough to be refreshing on this warm day, without puckering her mouth. When she was through, she sat a few minutes with her legs stretched, watching the crowds of noontime shoppers. She had seen several booths she'd like to visit. Shell jewelry, ribbon weaving worked into striking belts and vests, along with displays of native crafts that didn't interest her. Even some pottery as ghastly as that made by Otala Moraline's crazy aunt. Now that she'd lost track of the king and had no idea where Ronnie and George were, she might as well spend the afternoon shopping. With that cheering thought, she worked her way through the booths, back to the one with the shell jewelry. Then she saw the young man with the familiar way of carrying his head.
It can't be.
Rafa ducked among the people, working her way closer. From behind, he still looked familiar. She edged her way around a booth to get a side view and caught sight of his profile just an instant before he turned and looked her way. It was. Rafa opened her mouth to call out, just as he focused on her and paled. He spun on his heel and darted away. Rafa, startled, didn't move until someone touched her arm and pointed out that she was blocking the whole aisle.
Sorry.
It had to be the prince. It had to be Gerald, who was supposed to be dead, and he was afraid to see her. In one flash, she saw the whole pattern of deceit. Gerald wasn't dead. The man she had seen was the king, and he had come here to meet Gerald. King and prince. The phrase government in exile came to mind from her history studies. Lord Thornbuckle and Kevil Mahoney thought they'd defeated the king. He was planning an insurrection. Which meant that Ronnie and George, if they were still alive, were in mortal danger. Her skin tingled. She felt as preternaturally alert as she had that first night on the island. Did they know? Or were they about to walk into a conspiracy? She set off slowly in the direction Gerald had fled. She didn't expect to find him. She didn't even want to find him. But she wanted to see what that part of the city was like. Behind the street market, the streets resumed their normal, sedate appearance. Rafa noted that she was now on Bedrich, just crossing Cole. This was a residential area. 5-story apartments lining both sides of the street, each with its own distinct facade. She saw a woman with 3 identical children in blue smocks. Tried not to let herself think clone. They were children. And when they grinned up at her with identical, sticky smiles, she couldn't help grinning back. This would get her nowhere but farther from the hotel. Gerald had been scared. He wouldn't come back to see if she was in the neighborhood. Rafa slowed at the next street and glanced at the sign. Hari. And her tourist hand comp told her she would find nothing scenic if she kept going the same way. Just sore legs on the way back. She glanced around and finally shrugged to herself. She might as well go back to the hotel, see if any messages had come in from the Institute about the pharmaceutical samples she'd turned in.
These were not manufactured here. They were manufactured in modern equipment, using a process similar to, but not identical to, the one we developed. Now I can show you. Here.
Rafa stared at the squiggly lines and wished she had paid more attention to chemistry.
They've used an alternate synthetic route, which we don't like because it produces more waste. In addition, the isotope fraction suggests that the raw materials came from a source we don't use. Now, although we do have one old sample that parallels it from a mine in your territory, do you know the Patchcock system?
Not except for that mess when there was a war or something.
She realized that didn't sound very intelligent, but after all, she hadn't been old enough to pay much attention.
Well, before that, we used to import a little from one of the planets there, and we still have reference samples. It's not definitive by any means, but the Patchcock system could be a source of the raw materials. Now, I do know that there's a sizable pharmaceutical industry on Patchcock itself. The Moralines, I believe, are major investors.
Rafa wondered if those were the same Moralines whose daughter Otala had been such a pain at school. She and Brun had never liked Otala that much. Well, to be honest, at all. But she supposed she could look Otala up when she got back to Familia space.
And the drugs themselves, are they complying with your standards?
Aside from the fact that they're breaking the licensing agreement by using an alternate process, those in the first sample submitted do meet our standards. The second sample, however, is subtly different. Do you read chromatographs?
No, I'm sorry.
Never mind. I'll give you the complete analysis and references, of course. It's important for your neurologist to have this and understand the effects. In essence, the changes in the ring structures, the substitutions, are going to affect the quality of the rejuvenation, and this degradation will accumulate with repeated rejuvenations. Now, it's not as bad as the old method, and it should be reversible, but if your specialists have noticed some deterioration in memory and cognitive ability in some patients, this may explain it.
I know there's concern.
Frankly, I'm not surprised. It's possible that this is merely sloppy quality control in manufacturing. If, for instance, the reaction in the 14th step is poisoned, it's possible for that ring substitution to occur. But you must also consider industrial sabotage. Either a deliberate intent to adulterate the drugs to manipulate someone, or deliberate carelessness with the intent to maximize profits. Especially with the alternate process being used, it would be expensive to maintain the kind of quality we demand. The biologicals used to clean up the unreacted substrate can be difficult to extract.
This was all gobbledygook to Rafa. Except the part about sabotage and profit margins. She could see possibilities either way. And so, she was sure, could Lord Thornbuckle. She dug out the authorization card Lord Thornbuckle had given her.
I think this is too important to depend on one messenger. Here's the account number.
Chemtree, Lord Altman, the former king of the Familius Regnant, limped slightly. His legs ached. He had walked more kilometers in the past week than in the year before. The Neurosciences Institute had refused to give him his son's address, had said they would not violate the privacy of their patients. When he tried to insist that he was their father, he had rights, they pointed out that under his law, the clones had no legal identity at all.
Here, they are eligible for full citizenship. The biological relationship is irrelevant, especially for clones derived not from division in the embryo, but from tissue culture of an older individual. To the extent that these persons have a parent, it is the donor individual, their prime, as they called him.
But I was his father, too!
And how many biological children did you father?
3 boys.
And what happened to them?
They're dead.
All 3. Somehow that doesn't recommend you as a father.
He wanted to say it's not my fault, but he knew the other man thought it was.
What we will do is send word to the young men that you are here and want to contact them. It is then their decision whether or not to seek you out.
But that's not fair! What am I supposed to do if they won't see me?
Go back to the Familias.
I can't do that. I must see them. If only I could talk to them. I'm sure I can make them understand.
The other man's frown told him he had gone too far.
I rather doubt that. You haven't convinced me. We will do as I said. Tell them you are here and let them decide. They are adults under our law. They've applied for full citizenship. They have the legal right to decide for themselves, and I should warn you that you have no legal right to harass them.
He could hardly harass them when he couldn't find them. He knew their alias, at least the one they had been given, and he had started with the Smiths in the city directory. The name was not so common here as in the Familius, but it was common enough. He had met Smiths who were bankers, who were attorneys, who worked in the city's utility repair division, who were midwives and machinists. At least half of them were clones. He learned quickly not to explain his search. None would help him, not even to eliminate their clone sibs from the pattern. At this rate, it would take him years to find all the Smiths on this single planet. Borges took a gulp of his drink.
It's not just your girlfriend. There's some strange man looking for the Smiths. Claims to be the king. I didn't dare get close enough to find out if he saw me.
Should have changed your name. At least you know that the neurosciences people are keeping your secret.
There are a lot of Smiths, and we really didn't think anyone would come looking for us.
Surprise.
Ronnie cocked an eye at George. Was he going to be odious again? Here? He eyed the tension in every line of the clones' bodies.
Shut up. I didn't like you before, and I don't like your idea of jokes.
We're even. I don't like your idea of hospitality. This is silly, you know. Holding us like this doesn't accomplish anything you want. You need new identities, so your father, sorry, Gerald's father, doesn't find you. You need to be free to move around. You need friends who will steer the king away from you, warn you when he's near, all that. Instead, you have tied yourself down and us up. You're isolated. You don't have friends.
I said shut up!
Andres hit George, then looked at Borges for his reaction. Borges shrugged. Andres looked away.
You could go on and kill us.
George seemed undeterred by the blow that had reddened his face. Ronnie felt a sneaking sympathy with Andres.
But that wouldn't help either. You'd have to get rid of 2 fairly large, heavy corpses. Someone might see you, and although the Guanese have been cooperative so far, I suspect that murdering us would strain their sympathy. It would certainly upset Rafaela. And since you don't know her as well as I do, I warn you that she is likely to stick on Ronnie's trail until she finds him, dead or alive.
George, shut up! You're not helping.
Neither are you. We've tried being nice, we've tried being polite, helpful, entertaining, amusing, and they're still being idiots. Probably enough of that stupidity drug still in their systems.
Borges, this time, loomed over George with his hand raised.
It is not!
So I thought perhaps a bit of aggravation might make them wake up and think, if they can, or listen to wiser minds if they can't.
We are not stupid!
Right. Raise your voices. Yell and scream, and someone may call the police, or whatever the Guanese call them.
The guard.
Whatever. Listen, Borges, this has gone on long enough. Rafa saw you. She's going to start thinking and doing, a very dangerous combination. She probably thinks you're Geralt. And if she knows the king's here, she's going to think it's a conspiracy to regain the throne.
What? That's crazy!
No crazier than what you've done. It's what any person would think, believing that Geralt, who's supposed to be dead, and the king are in the same place. She's going to put that alongside our disappearance and think we're either dead or being held by the king and Geralt. Or their supporters.
I haven't seen her again.
She's not stupid, Bor. She can recognize danger when she sees it, and she can act. So the smartest thing for you to do is enlist us as allies. Let us run some interference for you.
Andres and Borges exchanged glances and glared at their captives.
As if we could trust you!
It's probably hard for clones to trust anyone outside the clone cluster, especially with the life you've had. But someday you'll have to, and you know us better than anyone else so far.
So what do you suggest?
What I said before, get new identities. Simple disguises to start with, maybe, but probably plastic surgery or biosculpts later. Change your names legally. I'm sure the neurosciences people will help.
But we can't go out until...
Oh, come now. This isn't an Adventure Cube thriller. Wait until dark. Take a private cab. Call the Institute from here and make arrangements.
The clones looked at each other, but said nothing. Ronnie held his breath.
Is this going to work?
Or you could let one of us out to arrange disguises, transportation, even check at the Institute and make sure the king isn't hanging around the front door. Find the back door.
I don't think so. The other... Perhaps you're right. It does make sense to disguise ourselves and take other names. One of our therapists at the Institute did suggest that, but it seemed unnecessary then.
One thing to consider. The king may not be the only one who wants to find you. If someone did want to set up a contender for a future throne, your tissues would be helpful, with or without your cooperation.
Well, we certainly can't trust you.
Then Andres pulled Borges to the far side of the room, where they conferred in whispers. The outside felt large and dangerous. Ronnie was surprised to find himself flinching away from the bustling crowd on the sidewalk. He had loathed that small, cramped room while he was in it, but now it seemed a safe haven. He understood why the clones were reluctant to go back out. When he came to the street market, he half hoped to see Rafa there. He bought himself a fruit pastry with the last coin in his pocket and ate it as he walked. No one seemed to notice him. No Rafa appeared, nor did the king. He wondered if Rafa had come across the king. He hoped not. That would really confuse things. At a public comm booth, he stripped his messages of the traveler's directory. 11 from Rafa, all with a reply code.
Please leave a message.
Hi, Rafa. It's Ronnie. What are you doing here? Did your parents change their mind about the engagement? I'll call again later.
He hoped anyone intercepting that message would hear only a young man in love. He hoped she was all right. Some dim memory of spy adventure stories suggested that he shouldn't use the same booth for all the calls he planned to make. He walked across the street to another one, and called the Neurosciences Institute. The clones had told him which extension to ask for.
He's out to lunch. Would you like to leave message or call back?
I'll call back, thanks.
In the meantime, he could find out if the king was using his own name. Rafa threw her packages on the table and started to stretch out for a nap, then saw the blinking light on the comm console.
A message from Ronnie and George.
Her heart pounded. She took a breath and tried to be calm.
Hi, Rafa. It's Ronnie. What are you doing here? Did your parents change their mind about the engagement? I'll call again later.
At the sound of Ronnie's voice, her vision dimmed for a moment, and her heart pounded. The message was almost over by the time her vision cleared, and the idiot hadn't left a reply code. Rage replaced whatever strong emotion had just swept her. She didn't stop to think about it. The comm console could capture the calling number and display its location. She looked at that, at the time the message had been left, and forgot about the nap. She was two blocks away when it occurred to her that this might not be a wise move. Perhaps Ronnie hadn't left a reply code because there were problems. Perhaps she kept walking. Perhaps if she was quick enough, he would still be there. The booth he'd called from, on the corner of Osip and Dixa, contained a thin woman and three active preschoolers, clearly a triad. Rafa looked around, ignoring the crafts, the food booths, and spotted another cluster of comm booths on the far side of the market. And there he was, unharmed, angled away from her, talking. His free arm moved, gesturing, and she was suddenly angry enough to wring that handsome neck. She strode across the market, ignoring everything, until she was right behind him. She could hear nothing. The Guarnesi comm booths had enviable privacy shields, but he had not blanked the booth visually. Rafa moved around until she could see his face. She wanted to see his face very badly, especially when he caught sight of her. He turned paper white and grabbed at the booth rail. His lips shaped her name. Then he held up a hand. He glanced away briefly, as if something said to him required a change in attention, then ended the connection and shot out of the booth as if kicked.
Rafa! How did you... Rafa!
She had been prepared to give him a stony glare and a crisp demand for information, but his hug was more frantic than possessive, and it felt good. She felt her anger leak away, to be replaced by first relief, then a wave of pure physical passion. Her legs felt odd. The ground seemed very far away.
I was so worried. I was afraid you were in trouble. You'll never guess what I've seen.
He was looking past her now, scanning the crowd as if he expected someone.
Oh?
Where's George? We need to warn him. Did you know the ex-king was here? And the prince? Gerald, who was supposed to be dead? He's not. I saw him. I think the king is in league with his son to take over the government again.
The king is not in league with his son. Gerald is dead.
But I saw him, and he recognized me and took off.
That wasn't Gerald.
It was. I'm not blind, Ronnie. Don't think you can treat me like a little idiot.
Now he looked at her, but not with the look she wanted.
You're not blind, but that wasn't Gerald. Think, Rafa. What have you seen since you've been here?
Clones! That was Gerald's clone. Has the king come here to get another son, take over the government?
Not with them. Him! Oh, blast it! I've already screwed up. No, it's not the king, or not exactly. The clones are from before, when Gerald was still alive. They've doubled for him.
But that's illegal.
Illegal, yes. And they don't want to have anything to do with the familias now. They want to get on with their lives, here in a place where clones are normal, where they can be full citizens.
You've seen. You've talked to them. Is that where you've been?
Rafa, I can't talk about it now. We have to get them some help before the king finds them. I was just talking to the Neurosciences Institute. They'll help get them new identities. But we have to help them get there without the king noticing. The Institute says he's made a pest of himself, and they suspect he's having the place watched.
Ronnie was scanning the crowd again. Rafa could feel the tension in his arm.
Let's go then. Take me to them.
I can't do that.
Why not? You don't think I'm going to let you walk back into trouble, do you? So that I can sit here and worry? Forget that!
She realized that she had clenched her hand on his arm, and a few people were glancing their way. She let go and turned away, furious again.
Rafa, I don't want to take chances.
And did I survive on the island just as well as you or not?
You did, but...
But you're afraid for me now. Who do you think will hurt me? Gerald's clones?
They're not quite stable.
No, but I presume they've had a good upbringing.
She gave him another long look, noticing the shadows under his eyes, the tight-drawn skin.
You look hungry. Who's been feeding you?
Well, they have. But they had to use our money, too. And it's been short.
Rafa took his hand again and led him into the market.
Well, then, that's my cue. I'll be the traditional lady, the loaf-bringer. Buttered toast does more than music to soothe the savage beast.
She was aware that she had mixed several metaphors, but in the meantime, she led Ronnie from one booth to another, loading his arms with sacks of pastries, loaves of bread, a fat round cheese, and a sausage of indecent length and girth.
Let's see. Fruit.
She carried away a sack of bright gold, pebbly-skinned fruits and a basket of dark purple berries. Ronnie led her away to the far side of the market.
Along this street. You know, you're risking a lot.
Not my sanity, though, and that was about to disappear along with you. This is much better. Besides, I have news about your original mission.
You do?
Yes, but I won't tell you until we're there, so hurry up.
Ronnie led her up the narrow stairs, half hoping the clones would be out and George would let them in. Instead, Borges opened the door. His eyes widened.
You promised! I thought we could trust you!
Then he recognized the sacks for what they were.
She found me, I swear it! And she bought the food. You'd better let us in.
If Borges had had any other thought, Rafa made sure he didn't act on it. She pushed her way through the door, with her nose on Ronnie's back. George, still tied up, looked around and his eyes lighted.
Rafa!
She ignored him for the moment, but gave both clones a long look that brought a flush to their cheeks.
Well, gentlemen, Ronnie tells me you aren't Gerald, either one of you. I presume you have names. May I know them?
I'm Andres and he's Borges.
I thought you might like something fresh to eat.
Rafa began unpacking the food. When Borges reached for a pastry, she stopped him with a glance.
Untie George.
Good for you, Rafa.
Shut up, George. I expect you are being odious again. It's not the time.
George got up when Borges had freed him and came to the table stiffly, rubbing his wrists.
Are you going to let us eat?
Yes, in the faint hope that hunger is what's been dimming your collective wits.
Whatever protests they might have made were lost in the descent on the food. Rafa nibbled a few of the purple berries while she watched the food disappear. When the rate of disappearance had slowed, she tapped the table with the knife Borges had used on the sausage. They looked up with the guilty expressions of little boys who had hogged the birthday cake.
Sorry, Rafa. We were just so hungry.
I'm not complaining about that. But it's time to start thinking again. All right. Ronnie told me that the Institute was quite willing to help you acquire new identities, but the former king has been badgering them, and they think he may be having the Institute watched.
And these two, and now you, know about us.
We're no threat, sir. Andres, or Borges, whichever you are. Ronnie and I have nothing more in mind than living in peace as far from our families as we can get.
Ronnie sat up straight. He hadn't realized that she had made up her mind on that subject.
Even George, I'm sure, has better things to do than make your lives miserable.
Mm. Many better things.
Shut up, George. So we can help you get to the Institute. And once inside, you know the king can't bother you. He has no authority here.
But what about the...
Rafa shot a glance at Ronnie that hit him like a brick in the teeth.
Once we've helped these gentlemen, then we can discuss the matters you and I still have to discuss.
It sounds to me as if you'd settle them all.
Within the limits possible, yes. Now, about getting you safely to the Institute, what sort of hours did they mention, Ronnie?
They said any time, and I thought in the dark...
would be the obvious time to pick. Here, have another pastry. May I suggest lunchtime? The king wanders around in both morning and afternoon and goes out in the evenings. But at lunch, he's sitting in the hotel eating. Besides, few fugitives choose midday to move around. And we should do this as soon as possible. Tomorrow, for instance. If the king has people looking for two copies of Gerald, give them something else. A group of young people, none of them exactly like Gerald. Surely you two can do simple disguises.
Borges looked at Andres.
Of course. It might work.
It will. Tomorrow, late morning, I'll come here alone. Be ready.
Rafa got up to leave, and then laid a sheaf of the local currency on the table.
And here, be sure to eat a good supper.
Late the next morning, Rafa found four alert young men, eyeing each other with some suspicion, but no open hostility. Two of them looked like brothers, but not clones. Something had changed in their hair color, the bones of their faces, their way of moving. She didn't stop to analyze it.
Come on, the king's back in the hotel. I waited to leave until he'd gone into the dining room. Ronnie, George, put your stuff in these pack sacks.
Andres eyed her cherry-colored tunic and the sheaf of bright flowers she carried along with a basket of pastries.
Shouldn't we be less conspicuous?
We can't really be inconspicuous. What we can be is conspicuously something other than what they expect. Students, whatever. Anything but two scared clones. If you'll just chatter along like normal people or eat.
They trooped downstairs as casually as if they were going to a party. Ronnie munched a cheese pastry, and the clones looked a bit dazed.
I don't see why you didn't bring a private car.
Now that would have been conspicuous. How often do hire cars come to this neighborhood? Come on, just through the market.
The market bustled with the lunchtime crowd, all more interested in food and drink than a girl with a bunch of flowers and her four companions. At the transit stop, a loose clump of people waited, most of them eating. Rafa began to relax.
Rafaela Forrester Science!
Rafa jumped as if she'd been poked with a pin, then tried to pretend nothing had happened. All four young men had gone rigid. The clones looked as if they might faint.
Rafaela!
Through the noise of her heart beating, Rafa could now tell that it was an old lady's quavery disapproval, certainly not the king. She turned around and found herself face to face with Otala's aunt.
Yes?
She smiled as casually as she could while impaled on that indignant gaze. Otala's aunt was draped in shades of mauve, with a knitted purple cap adorned with droopy knitted flowers in pink and beige. Rafa had to struggle not to burst out laughing.
Don't pretend you don't know me. You were at school with my niece Otala. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Your parents will hear about this.
About what?
Running off to carouse in foreign parts with a young man, and not just one of them.
Otala's aunt shook a ring-covered finger under Rafa's nose.
Everyone knows your family doesn't want you to marry Ronald Carruthers, and here you are!
Venezia's head shot forward like a turtle's from its shell as she peered at the back of four young male heads.
You needn't hide, young man. I saw you across the market, laughing and chatting as if you had nothing better to do. And who are the others, if you please?
Oh.
Ronnie turned around. The others still pretended not to hear. None of your business was what Rafa wanted to say to the question, but practicality as well as manners prevented her. Old ladies like this didn't quit bothering you just because you were rude. They had dealt with more rudeness already than the average youth could think up. Rafa tried to think if anything would help and glanced past Otala's aunt to the person behind her. He was pushing a barrow, and on the barrow were pottery pieces of incredible ugliness. Half-melted, graceless shapes and colors that made her stomach turn. Recognition and counterattack came together.
Those pots.
Otala's aunt turned one of the colors on them, an ugly puce.
You wouldn't understand. They aren't just pots, they're...
I understood that you yourself were quite an artist in pottery. You gave some to Otala. She had them at school. I noticed when I was in the market the other day how much the local wares resembled them. Perhaps...
Great artists derive inspiration from many sources.
And lesser artists plagiarize. Sometimes those who aren't artists simply...
All right. I couldn't make enough pots on my own. My family kept asking for more and more and more. Finally, I got someone to make a few for me, and then a few more.
But why such ugly ones?
Otala's aunt shook her head as if she hadn't heard right, and then smiled sadly.
I kept hoping they'd quit asking. It seems the uglier the product, the more they want.
Why didn't you just tell them you were tired of making pots?
Oh, my dear, you aren't old enough to understand. Someday, when you're grown and you're enjoying things, your relatives will start complaining. You never finish anything you start, they'll say. Doesn't matter what it is. I expect that Ronald's aunt, Cecilia DeMarctos, heard the same thing about her horses.
That's true.
You see? I think my family wanted to make sure I stuck to pottery. And that's why they kept asking for more. And to be honest, my dear, I did want to quit. They were right.
Still, about these pots and Ronnie.
Oh, all right. I won't tell on you if you don't tell on me. But I still think young girls have no business running around in foreign lands with four young men. One was quite enough for me in my young days.
The tram came in, and Rafa moved to board it with the others.
And don't think I don't recognize young George Mahoney there with his ears the color of ripe plums.
The rest of the trip to the Institute passed without incident. When they met again in Rafa's hotel room, Ronnie and George, fresh from showers, in clean clothes, had their usual glossy surface.
We have more troubles than getting the clones to safety. Some of the rejuvenation drugs have been adulterated, and none of the samples we brought, yours or mine, were manufactured here.
None?
None. They did an isotopic analysis, and in their database, which they admit isn't all-inclusive, there's a match with Patchcock. What?
Nothing.
Tell me.
Otalamoraline disappeared on Patchcock. I don't know any more. I'm not supposed to know that much, but I always could read upside down and backwards.
Is that why Lord Thornbuckle sent Brunoff with Captain Serrano?
Maybe. Probably. Just in case someone's out to get the daughters of wealthy families.
Oh!
Rafa was seriously annoyed with Lord Thornbuckle and her own parents, but on mutually exclusive grounds. She didn't like being thought incompetent enough to need to be sent away, and she didn't like being thought negligible enough to be sent from Castle Rock to the Guernsey Republic alone. If anyone had wanted to harm her, she'd have been unprotected.
You're trustworthy, Rafa. You wouldn't get into trouble. Brun would poke her nose into every stinging nettle she could find. Otala was the same.
She was not. Otala was a mean-minded snitch. Brun got into mischief for the fun of it. Otala poked into things to get other people in trouble.
I'll never understand the way women pick at each other.
You would if you'd been in school with Otala. She nearly got Brun expelled. Besides, I've heard you talk about your schoolmates.
Oh, it's different. None of us were the sweet flower of young womanhood. Ow! You hit me!
And will again if you don't behave. Be odious to someone else for a change.
It's odd about Patchcock. It keeps showing up in all this. Captain Serrano told me about the Patchcock incursion, and Otala disappeared.
Now, that can't be connected. Those riots were years ago. We were infants or something.
And now this, about the drugs. It ought to make sense some way, and it doesn't. It would be great if we could wrap the whole thing up for them. Go to Patchcock, find out what happened to Otala, find out if the Moralines are adulterating the drugs on purpose, or just chasing profits. They might not even understand what could go wrong.
I don't think we can. We need to take this evidence back to Lord Thornbuckle first, and...
He needs it, I agree, but we can't add anything to it. None of us are chemists. We don't understand this stuff. If we sent it by several routes... To be sure it got through, that should be enough.
Certainly Otala's friends are more likely to figure out where she's hiding than someone who doesn't even know her. Not that we're friends, exactly. Even I thought that she was an awful prig sometimes.
Besides, we have a flair for it. Look at what we accomplished here. It could have been a very sticky situation indeed, even dangerous. But we all came out of it with what we needed to know and no damage done.
Rafa had her doubts about that. Those two unhappy young clones would have more trouble than they thought adjusting to life as independents. Their new faces, whatever they were, would not change their natures. A fragment of poetry her Aunt Marta quoted swam into her mind.
No thing, neither cunning fox nor roaring lion, can change the nature born in its blood.
George looked startled, but Ronnie grinned at her.
Exactly. You and I, and George, of course, are good at this sort of thing. Besides, think what will happen if we get back home. We'll all be wrapped away in protective family swaddlings. Whereas, if we solve the whole rejuvenation problem for them, well, the drug part anyway, they'll have to recognize that we really are adults, and let us make our own decisions.
I don't know, Ronnie. Rafa's not enthusiastic about this. And if it's dangerous, she shouldn't go, perhaps. She can explain to Lord Thornbuckle what we're up to, in case we need backup or something.
In his tone, Rafa heard, "She's not Brunn." And he thought Otala was priggish. Did he think the same of her?
Don't be ridiculous. If you'll remember, I did quite well on the island. Just because I can be prudent doesn't mean I'm timid. Yes?
Madam, Venezia Glendower Moraline Sevatigos wishes to speak with you.
Oh, of course.
Rafa held up her hand for silence.
It's Otala's Aunt Venezia again.
Ronnie and George nodded and settled back into their chairs with the clear intention of letting Rafa deal with it.
Raffaella, my dear, it just occurred to me. There's something you could do to help me.
Yes.
It's Otala. You were her friend in school, I know.
Not a close friend, really.
Well, I remember your name.
In Auntian logic, that seemed to be enough.
I'm worried about her. She missed her brother Seagrin, and her parents keep telling me not to worry, yet that she's a wild girl still under the influence of schoolmates such as yourself, my dear, and that blonde girl, Bubbles, or whatever her name was. Do you know where she is?
No.
Rafa didn't know where Otala was, even though George had seen something which reported that Otala had gone missing on Patchcock.
I thought she told me she was going to visit Patchcock. Such a silly idea, because there's nothing to see. But her parents insist that I misunderstood, that I must have had my head in the kiln. Of course, they don't know that I don't do that anymore, and I couldn't explain.
Rafa could think of nothing to say. She had to clench her teeth to keep her jaw from dropping open.
I wanted to go look for her, but they made it quite clear that I was not welcome to do so. Silly, really, because I own enough stock in the company that I should be able to do what I want. Anyway, whatever they say, I think that's where she went, and she should have come back by now. I thought that you, that perhaps you, having gone off with a young man, might know if that's what happened to Otala. Because if it is what happened, then I could tell the family and they'd quit worrying.
Rafa found her attention caught by details that bobbed past in the torrent of words that connected with other details from the earlier conversation. Suddenly, the somewhat scatty aunt who created, or faked creating, the ugliest pottery objet d'art she had ever seen, began to look like someone else, like the investor, perhaps even the major stockholder, who was being kept away from the business while nefarious activities went on. What if Otala had suspected as much?
If I could just come up and talk to you. A bright young girl like you, and with a young man like Ronald Carruthers, you couldn't come to any harm.
Harm?
Could I? We could have tea, or...
Not tea. Why don't you just come up and we'll chat?
Wonderful.
Before Rafa could mention that she had other visitors as well, the connection blanked. Quickly, in breathless phrases, she told the other two what she had heard.
And so, if she wants to go to Patchcock, it gives us the perfect excuse.
To be thrown out by her family. I suppose she's going to tag along too, just for decency's sake.
Venezia, looking more aunt-like than ever, floated in on ripples of sheer lavender that seemed to drape her from head to heel. Scarves competed for space on her shoulders, and strips of lace fluttered in her wake.
Ah, my dear Raffaella, so like your dear Aunt Marta. She used to wear just that color.
You know Aunt Marta?
Long ago. She was more serious. She even took a doctorate in synthetic chemistry. Did you know that?
Rafa hadn't. While she digested this surprising fact about her favorite aunt, Venezia looked around.
Ronald, George, where are the other two?
Other two? Oh, the young men at the tram stop. Just some boys Ronnie and George met in a bar one night.
Locals? I'm glad they're not here, dear, because I would not wish to discuss family business in front of strangers. I know I can trust all of you.
She favored them all with a bright little smile that made Rafa's teeth ache.
Have you explained about Otala?
Not really. I thought you could.
With that, Venezia interrupted to go over the whole thing again, this time with additional commentary on Otala's scholastic record, the errors in judgment that had made it necessary for Bertie and Oscar to ask for her financial assistance, her opinion of men in general, and her family in particular, On and on, until Rafa felt that she would doze off in sheer self-defense.
And what would you like us to do?
Oh, well, what I'd like you to do is go to Patchcock and find Otala. If, as I suspect, she's living some kind of adolescent fantasy of being a hero of the working masses or something, let me know that she's safe. I'm quite willing to pay your expenses.
We couldn't possibly ask that of you. Besides, suppose your family noticed something. We all have ample allowances. It's really no problem.
I insist. At least the ticket's there.
All right, but we must make our own reservations. In case your family is hiding something from you, it will be easier if they don't make the connection.
Passenger service to the Patchcock system routed through Vardiel and Sostos. Vardiel, Rafa remembered, was the ancient seat of the Morallines. Ronny pored over the display in his copy of The Investor's Guide to Familius Regnant Territories, a guide cube purchased in the Guerni Republic.
It's an awfully roundabout approach. I'll bet they don't ship freight that way. If this is accurate, there are two near jump points, with easy vectors to Brot, Vesely, and Tambor. And Tambor's a direct to Rockhouse.
Morallines like control, but why not? It's their investment base.
George glanced around their cabin and shrugged elaborately. Rafa glared. If they were being monitored, his glance and shrug would look as stagey to anyone else as it did to her. They had agreed not to discuss their plans once on board the ship to Patchcock. The system itself, yes, since none of them had been there. The other passengers were all on business transfers, older men and women whose conversation was full of technical detail. Rafa strained her ears and memory to interpret them, but the veneer of chemical knowledge she'd picked up on music didn't help her penetrate the dense thickets of jargon. They had dropped into the Patchcock system before one of the other passengers, an older woman, spoke to the young people.
Are you in Bioset or Synthesis?
Neither. I don't even know what they are. I'm just a tourist, really.
Ah.
During the pause, Rafa could almost see the cascades of decision points in the other's mind.
You're with a family?
Though the words were polite, Rafa understood that meant rich, spoiled, idle. But that was the most harmless hypothesis, so she didn't react.
Yes, my aunt's trying to get me involved in business, and I told her I needed to travel more. I am hoping to visit some of the pharmaceutical facilities here.
Here? Where did you hear about them?
I went to school with Otala, Otala Morallines.
Were you planning to visit her?
Is she here? I thought she lived on Vardiel. At least when she was in school, we visited there.
No, I mean, yes, she still lives with her family, the last I heard. I just wondered why you were here.
Well, Otala bragged about the facilities. My aunt, you see, has investments in pharmaceuticals, so I told her I'd like to see these and others.
A good excuse for traveling, then?
Rafa smiled and leaned closer.
Yes, and you see, my family doesn't approve of Ronny. This way they think I'm traveling on business for Aunt Marta. Ronny and I met a long way from the capital.
And the other young man?
Ronny's friend George. Well, of course, I know George, too, but everyone knows Ronny and George travel together, so it's less obvious that I... You know.
I think it's incredible that you family people go through all these maneuvers. Why not just take your shares and go live with the boy, if that's what you want?
I couldn't do that. It's just not done.
She had never thought of it. The idea sat in her mind, staring back at her. She forced herself to ignore it. The Guernsey tourist cube had an account of the Patchcock incursion, under investors' warnings, possible political instability, far more extensive than what Rafa remembered vaguely from school. Ronny read the section.
Captain Serrano told me about that. I wonder how the Guernsey found out about the terms of the Glasgow contract.
They said they'd bought raw materials from the Patchcock system.
They probably had agents of their own poking around.
I suppose. In the aftermath of the incursion, it would have been easier to start manufacturing the drugs here. Retooling the lines wouldn't be as obvious if they needed complete rebuilding anyway.
How are we going to approach this?
Didn't you hear what I told those people in the lounge? My Aunt Marta has pharmaceutical investments. She asked me to gather background. She has.
The two others looked at her in disbelief.
I was in the Guerny Republic and heard about Patchcock. That's all I have to say. We'll see where it goes from there.
Something's going on. I'm just not sure Otala's aunt is as stupid as she pretends to be.
I don't think she's stupid at all. But she may be baffled by the family. And if they're manufacturing illegal pharmaceuticals, perhaps they're even drugging her.
If they could do that, they could get their shares back.
Wait. It's all about the rejuvenation process. And the legal changes. What do you want to bet that Otala's aunt hasn't had the new one? Maybe none at all, but if she did, it was the Stowchaster.
How do you figure that?
Because it changed the inheritance laws, and it's going to change the laws about cognitive competence. The ones that caused your aunt so much trouble, Ronnie.
What? I don't see how the kind of rejuvenation someone has matters much.
Weren't you listening to them at all? Because the Stowchaster procedure couldn't be repeated, but people kept trying it and going bonkers. First, they made it illegal to do repeats. Then they changed the law so that a crazy senior couldn't tie up a family's assets forever.
Yes, but now it's not illegal. The new procedures...
can now be legally repeated, yes. And we have laws about how competency affects inheritance, but no laws dealing with indefinitely extended lives. Think, Ronnie. Suppose your father, or mine, lives, well, hundreds of years, if not forever. Those of our class who've been expecting to inherit a tidy living will wait, having our own rejuvenations, until they finally die.
But nobody's going to live that long.
Are you sure? I'm not. The oldest serial rejuvenants are now in their 90s. The oldest people now alive used the Stowchaster, which they can't repeat. In the next decade or so, the balance will shift until all the rejuvenants are repeats. Maybe the first generation of them will be content with only a few rejuvenations, but someone's going to want to live a lot longer. Will your father give up his position in the family business just because he hits 80 or 100 or 120? I doubt it. And the law is set up to test competency, not age. And if the Moralines think they have a corner on the process, they're not going to want a nosy old aunt, whom they cannot control because she can't rejuve anyway, poking around in their business backyard.
Even if they're manufacturing the drugs illegally, does this mean they're adulterating them? I don't see that it follows.
Perhaps not. But if you wanted to control a good bit more than one end of the pharmaceutical industry, wouldn't you be tempted to slip a few attitude adjustments into the mix? Lorenza certainly did.
We are going to be very careful on Patchcock. Very, very careful.
The Serrano Legacy, Winning Colors, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2002, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Michael John Casey, Terrence Aselford, Sonny Lasky, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael Glenn, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Peter Stray, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Demery, Andy Clements, Ken Jackson, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for the Deathstalker series, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Misfortune follows Anya Creed. Hired by the Sultanate of Rimba Perak to find an ancient holy relic, Anya finds herself in the middle of a centuries-old battle for control of the fate of the world.
Let us say, at the least, that the contents possess enormous symbolic significance. Their mere possession confers great status and propaganda value, such that, in the wrong hands, they could cause irreparable, unimaginable harm.
That's why I am determined to keep it from both our domestic extremists and present-day crusaders.
You! Out!
Won't you at least tell us why you've betrayed us to the Sultan?
We must regain possession of the relic. It is our holy quest.
We cannot afford to let the coffin fall into the wrong hands.
I can't believe you. You actually plan to destroy a priceless ancient artifact that might have untold historical significance. I guess it's my turn.
Rogue Angel 11, Provenance.
Gentlemen, I, Anya Creed, hereby claim this relic in the name of science and the global archaeological community.
I am the king who was.
Graphic Audio presents. There have been major incidents at dozens of sites across the globe. DC Comics. A lot of deaths, a lot of damage.
The king who will be.
Justice League of America. He's drawing his power from the planet itself, Batman.
I am.
His aim is to destroy the world.
The Stone King.
What in the world could be strong enough to overcome?
Can we launch a full-scale assault?
Come on, Wally, you can do this!
No, I won't allow it. I can't allow it.
It's impossible to keep flying. I'm going down.
There's no way. I'm gonna make it in time.
The cycle is ending. Make peace with your gods. Tonight, every last one of you will die.
Copyright DC Comics 2008. The Justice League of America, Batman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics 2008. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.